Call the meeting of the Energy Finance and Policy Division to order. Quorum is present, although it seems to be all over the place. And let it be noted that it's not necessarily a particularly happy quorum this afternoon, but we're here nonetheless. The first order of business is to approve the minutes from the last meeting. Representative Gardner, I would entertain a motion to that effect.
I would like to move the approval of the minutes of the previous meeting.
Thank you. Representative Gardner moves approval of the minutes. Any additions or corrections? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Minutes are approved. And the first bill on the agenda today is House File 670. Representative Liebling, please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee.
Actually, I'm sorry, Representative Liebling. First, since we have so few bills presented by anyone who's not a member of the committee, I forgot that someone else will have to move your bill. So the chair will move House File 670 to be before us and to be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on E-12 Education. So now, Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and really happy to see all of you here. I know you're probably not so happy to be here, but I'm really happy to have this bill heard. I think it's a very important issue and a bill that I really think creates a win-win situation, and it really arose out of a conversation that I had with my school district, the Rochester School District, a couple of years ago about some difficulties that they have in making energy conservation improvements for the school district. And with me today is Cheryl Corrier, who is the Director of Business Services from the Rochester Public Schools. And Ms. Corrier is going to give you a bit more of an overview about what this bill would do. So I'm going to turn it over to her. Thank you.
Mr. Chair. You're welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record and then proceed.
Thank you. I'm Cheryl Corrier, and I'm the Director of Business Services for the Rochester Public Schools. And my position on this bill is that the Alternative Facility Levy Authority should be expanded to include energy conservation projects. So, Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, and members of the committee. In Rochester, I'm responsible for both the finances of the district as well as the operations. So my testimony today will include a look at both the facility issues specifically pertaining to the need for energy conservation and the related financing needs. Rochester is one of 21 districts in the state that have alternative facility bonding authority. We consider this authority to be one of our strategic assets in being able to be good stewards of the public's investment in K-12 education, and we thank you for that. The current levy authority for alternative facility funding, and this the funding actually comes in two pieces, a pay-as-you-go levy and also bonds. And it indicates, quote, that like assets are to be replaced with like assets, unquote. And it's really that phrase and how that's been interpreted by the Department of Education that is very at the crux of the issue here. And this process actually works very well, except for those projects that would include an improvement to energy conservation. When the buildings are already ripped apart to complete other deferred renewal projects, we're currently prevented from incorporating current-day energy-conserving equipment into the renewal project unless we use general fund resources or general obligation bonds. And one of your questions might be, well, why don't you bond? I'll give you an idea. We have $7 million, roughly $8 million a year in pay-as-you-go levy. One of those projects might be large enough to incorporate replacement of boilers or other energy conservation issues. It's kind of tough to bond for something of that magnitude. It's a little bit rough. And I'm sure you can understand with the advances in energy conservation technology, we feel that we have a bit of a roadblock. Also, to go back at another time, an attempt to install the energy conserving equipment would be both cost and time prohibitive. I'd like to give you an idea of the relationship between total deferred renewal and the amount of deferred renewal that would specifically relate to energy conservation projects that are currently not allowed in the alternative facility legislation. Although Rochester is in the process of doing our own building condition assessment, I want to share with you the relative numbers that one of the metro area schools shared with us before we began our assessment project. This was a school district had 1.6 million square feet and the average age of the buildings was 35.8 years. Rochester is approximately 38.5, so we're somewhere. They came up with $48 per square foot in deferred renewal. $43 of that would qualify under the current alternative facility funding authority. $2.50 a square foot, or roughly 5%, that did not qualify was related to the energy conservation project. So I guess we could use that as maybe a rule of thumb, and I'm sure you have fiscal notes which would further support what kind of impact this would have on the levy. I have passed out a sheet that contains four examples of what I call easy sells. Energy conservation projects. And here's the reason I call them easy sell. You invest an additional 5% in the deferred maintenance project, and we can get our capital back in 4 or 5 years. All the examples you have here, they're very typical examples. There's nothing fancy or flashy. The estimate of 4 to 5 years comes from mechanical engineering folks. And after those 4 or 5 years, you still have a legacy of energy savings, and that's where money can go back into the classroom. One of the examples there is boilers and heating systems. And it gets back to this issue of like. There are currently systems that are 96% efficient, but something we may be replacing is only 80% efficient. And it's sort of a pain of conscience. You hate to put in 80% efficiency when 96% efficiency is available and it's proven technology. And it's a lot like any one of us replacing our home furnace. We probably wouldn't look to 20-year-old technology with something else available. I'm sure one of the questions that you're anxious to ask me is if it's so important, why do you need levy authority to accomplish it? And I would say, by and large, district finance, and I know Rochester is only one of these 21 schools impacted here, but they're not sufficient enough to tackle the energy conservation projects. So I come back to the conclusion that supportive legislation would be very, very helpful for us to accomplish this and to be able to make the investments, get the money back in 4 or 5 years, and then also have a legacy of cost savings for the classroom. That concludes my testimony. I just want to express my appreciation and gratitude for the time that you've taken for me to express my views. Mr. Chair, if I could.
Yes, Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I just wanted to add a little bit to what Ms. Corrier explained. As you see the bill, what it does is add to this alternative facilities funding that some school districts can use. It adds the ability to make energy investments with that funding as well. But another piece of the bill that I consider to be pretty important is, if you look on page 2, It says that in order to make energy conservation investments to a school facility under this section, a school district must first receive approval of its energy project study under Section 216C.37. And what that is a section in the statutes that really goes back to a program that was instituted back in 1983 for schools, where there was some bonding money and some other money from the Exxon settlement that was available, and schools were given authority to bond for energy improvements, to bond to pay them back. They could use this pool of money and then pay back with this over 10 years. And under that legislation from 1983, schools went to the Department of Commerce to get to have approval of their programs to do this. And then at some point, and I actually have Tim Strom from House Research here if you have more questions about this, because this is more in the area of the school funding issues, but at some point the levy authority was withdrawn and schools stopped using the program. They could still bond, they didn't any longer have levy authority to pay back these bonds. So what we're referencing here is a section of statute that's been used in the past. I've had conversations with people from the Department of Commerce, and there also is a fiscal note. I haven't actually seen it, but there's a very... Okay, thank you. So you all, I guess, have the fiscal note from the Department of Commerce.
Yeah, yes, there is a fiscal note in the packets, members. Okay. But I should point out that the fiscal concerns with this bill would actually be taken up in the K-12 finance division, and the reason the bill is here is for the policy considerations.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to give you that little bit of background that in terms of the policy in this bill that relates to this committee, I think has more to do with the Department of Commerce's oversight of this process. And the Department of Commerce is prepared to do this, to really give schools expertise. This part, what is an energy conservation investment? There is no definition of that here, but the definition is in this 216C37.37, which is a very established procedure for the department to determine, to make these determinations. So I just wanted to let this committee know that is in there and an important part of this bill. So it was my intention in putting this together to have the school districts use the Department of Commerce as a resource to help them determine what would make a good investment with these dollars.
And Representative Liebling, what is the position of the department on the bill?
Well, Mr. Chair and members, the department is, I guess one could say that they're not opposed to it. They are, I just talked to Jeremy Lefevre this morning. He was unable to be here because he's buried in snow. But or at least his car is. But I think there was supposed to be perhaps somebody here from the Department of Commerce who maybe could speak to this.
Ms. Brewston, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Christy Brewson from the Department of Commerce. The department has reviewed the bill, and we're supportive of measures that move efficiency forward for schools. We don't have comments on the financing piece of it because it's not an area of our expertise, but we do have people available to review this under the provisions in the bill.
Representative Westman.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure if this is for Ms. Brewson or maybe the author. You referenced the money that was put in for petrol fund. Are you suggesting you take some of that, or this would just be a levy that's taken, paid for by the local district?
Representative Liebling?
Mr. Chair and Representative Westrom, I really was describing that by way of background.
Okay.
About this, how this Commerce Department piece came to be in the statute and what that was about. I don't think there's any more of that bonding authority left or that pool of money. So this would allow what What this is it is levy. It's non-voter levy authority for school for certain school districts, and of course that would be more dealt with in the education committee.
Right. Okay.
But,
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebman, that's what I thought, but I just, when you referenced it, the reason I asked, last year we had a provision that Representative Peterson that worked with myself and others on using some of the leftover remaining monies to allow school districts to maybe work on conservation, renewable energy type projects by expanding the definition a little bit, and that's why I asked, because I'm at least interested in maybe trying to resurrect that language with Representative Peterson and others to get that done this year, if we can.
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Bruceman, this is not the first bill that we've heard in this committee that asks the department to do more technical advice to school districts or on other projects. Might more technical assistance funding, say through the efficiency bill or through SIP funding, make Representative Liebling's bill fly a lot easier and be able to be fully implemented by school districts?
Mr. Chair and Representative Kalin, as this bill is drafted, I think we have staff that are sufficient to handle the review of these projects. But again, as the fiscal note indicates, depending on what other things are passed this session, that'll impact our available resources to do this function.
Great. Thank you.
Further questions for Ms. Bruceman? Thank you. Further questions for the author or the testifier? Well, Representative Liebling, I think this is something that is unfortunately necessary. We would like to see some of these projects being capable of being accomplished without having to levy for them if we had adequate funding in the first place. But I think it's something that... it's a consideration that's, in my opinion, long overdue. We've had public buildings, state buildings, school buildings, other public buildings constructed for a long time based on the principle that whatever is the cheapest is the best. That considered in the very shortest term, and if that were really a valid principle, I guess we'd all be driving Yugos, but we don't we don't find any of them in the parking ramp attached to this building, and I think that sort of the same principle here applies. I thank you for bringing this bill forward, and if there are no further questions, the chair will renew his motion that House File 670 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the committee on the K-12 Education Committee. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Liebling. Next on the agenda, House File 660, Representative Bly.
I'd like to, you can remind me, is this going into the omnibus bill or consideration of the omnibus bill? You're referring to another committee.
The motion that we had has not been asked to be seen by another committee, but the motion that we presume that would be made would be to be placed on a general register.
Okay. So I would move that this bill, House File 660, be placed on the register.
Very well. Representative Bly Please present your bill.
Okay. This is a bill to try to assure that the there is realized a state economic benefit from the renewable energy standard, and that requires that commissioners of employment, economic development, in consultation with commissioners of commerce and agriculture and public utilities, develop a short and long-term strategy to maximize economic benefit from the renewable energy development required on the state renewable energy objectives and standards. And I do have an amendment. I believe that you have copies of it. And to the amendment, I'd like to invite a testifier to come forward.
Certainly.
The amendment would be, should I move the amendment first, or would you like an explanation?
Certainly, you can move the amendment. We'll take testimony before we vote on it.
Okay. All right.
So, Representative Blythe moves the A1 amendment.
And the gist of the amendment would be to insert after the word benefit on line 13 the words of the quality of jobs created by the renewable energy activities required under section 216B, period 1691, and of protecting the union organizing rights of workers who will fill those jobs. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Reese Ledger. I'm Strategic Campaigns Director of Teamsters Local 120, which has over 11,000 members and is the largest of its kind in the state. I'm here to express support for HF 660. The bold investment that Minnesota intends on making in renewable energy will require strategic planning to benefit the state. This bill will begin the process of formulating short and long-term strategies to maximize the value of renewable energy. However, HF 660, as originally drafted, overlooked an inconvenient truth and ignored our nation's most important renewable resource, the American worker. Too often, employers that benefit from billions of dollars in federal and state tax incentives disregard the responsibility to create quality jobs and respect labor laws. Unfortunately, employers like DMI Industries, a subsidiary of Otter Tail Energy that manufactures bases for wind turbines, are more concerned with their bottom lines than the safety and well-being of their workers. While more than willing to benefit from government subsidies, they repeatedly disregard laws governing everything from occupational safety to gender discrimination to union organizing. The 200 workers at DMI Industries grew weary of working with respiration masks, welding hoods, and ventilation systems that were inadequate or in disrepair. They grew tired of working 12 to 14-hour days, day in and day out, because the company refused to hire an adequate number of workers to keep up with record demand. Quite simply, they want both to put in a hard day's work and to return safely home with time for their families. They decided to organize a union with Teamsters Local 120. DMI Industries responded by hiring Barons and Tate, a notorious union-busting law firm. In short order, workers were forced to attend captive audience meetings where they were subjected to hours of anti-union propaganda. More union busting, ranging from illegal firings to worker interrogations, are likely to follow if the past is any indication. HF 660, as originally written, does not include consideration of job quality and workers' rights as part of the strategic planning process. Renewable energy can be a lifeline to workers who once built everything from armaments to adhesive tape to automobiles in Minnesota. Teamsters Local 120 urges the Commissioner of Employment and Economic Development and others to consider labor issues and formulating strategy so that the state's investment in renewable energy is also an investment in creating good middle-class jobs. Thank you.
Any questions for the author or his witness members? Um, Sorry, Representative Gunther. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Bly, are we looking for net economic development benefits or you know, deed can perform some of these things, but this kind of dynamic analysis is kind of, it's subjective.
Representative Gunther, we do have the amendment before us.
I think your question is a
more general one. Could we act on the amendment if there are no questions addressing that, Representative Osman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And looking at the amendment, and I'm looking at where it goes into the bill, and it, Representative Bly, is it your intent that the strategy that we're looking at would be then focused strictly at jobs, and that's it?
No, it's not my intent that be focused strictly at jobs, but that part of it be.
Can you explain to me how this amendment then doesn't do that? It doesn't talk about encouraging small business or anything. The original statement seems to me encourages all kinds of things with regard to economic development. And I can see if we said including quality of jobs and so forth, but we're concerned that the wording may eliminate, you know, the potential for small business, and I think and focus right strictly on just what's going to happen to the jobs. And of course, if we don't have businesses start out, there aren't any jobs.
I kind of tripped over that myself, Representative Osmond, and I think if you, about the third time you read it, it does make sense, but I think it could be more clearly worded. Representative Slide.
Thank you, Mayor. It certainly was not my intent to be exclusive. If you have a recommendation or if you think that it could be worded more clearly, I'd welcome that.
Representative Osmond?
Mr. Chair, I was wondering if, with regard to staff or whoever else helped draft this originally, am I misinterpreting how this amendment goes in there? It seems to me that the first statement is that the strategy should include, you know, the short-term, long-term opportunities for economic benefit, leaves that definition wide open. But then it says the amendment then narrows that down to benefit of quality jobs created. So it seems like we just really narrow that in. Am I misinterpreting?
I think
exactly
the critical thing is that comma ahead of of.
Comma ahead of of.
Read it out loud. It reads, the strategy must include consideration of both short-term and long-term opportunities for economic benefit of the quality of jobs created by the renewable energy activities, etc., and protecting, etc. It's the of the quality goes back to consideration and the at the beginning of the sentence. But I agree, it's not very easily deciphered.
Mr. Chair, if we inserted an and after that comma, would that take care of the problem?
I think that'd be helpful.
Representative Osman, Mr. Eloff, I do think that that's helpful. Would you like to move that amendment to the amendment?
Mr. Chair,
Representative Bly, would you care to incorporate that?
I would incorporate that, yes.
Very well, just for the record. And line 1.2 of the amendment, after the comma and before of, insert and. With that, Mr. Eloff.
Thank you.
Any other questions to the amendment? Representative Westman.
Well, Mr. Chair, maybe just a question for Mr. Eloff or for Andy. I didn't get it electronically. Is that, did you send it or and I missed it or?
Maybe it'd be easier to just read it?
Yeah, that'd be
Okay.
Straight off.
With the change we just made in the amendment, it would now read, the strategy must include consideration of both short-term and long-term opportunities for economic benefit and of the quality of jobs created by the renewable energy activities required under Section 216B.1691 and of protecting the union organizing rights of workers who will fill those jobs.
And what line is that being inserted on?
Well, it's line 13 of the bill.
Okay. Mr. Chair, and I maybe can ask the question now because it relates to this and the bill, but Representative Bride, thank you, Mr. Chair. Are you intending that these would be unionized jobs based on the testimony we just heard? That sounded like what you're leaning towards or the witness is leaning towards. Can you tell me exactly what you're intending with this legislation and
well,
what do you envision?
Representative Bly.
Thank you, Chairman and Representative. My intent is that the rights of workers to unionize and organize not be overlooked. Not that all jobs would necessarily be union jobs, but I think that the testifier attested to the fact that there have been examples of times when workers' rights were not respected.
And Mr. Chair,
Representative West,
Representative White, he referenced DMI. Where is that located? Is that a Minnesota company?
Mr. Chair, Representative, DMI is a subsidiary of Otter Tail Power, Otter Tail Energy, which is a Minnesota company. The plant which manufactures wind turbine bases is located in Fargo, but does employ a very large number of Minnesota residents.
And Representative Western?
Mr. Chair, to the witness, and so you have problems with what they're doing right now, and you would like to unionize their organization, it sounded like?
That's true, Elijah.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Representative, my purpose in mentioning DMI was just to use a most recent example of an organizing campaign where we're abiding by the dictates of the National Labor Relations Act and are hoping that the employer will return the favor. Unfortunately, that hasn't always been the case. In fact, in more instances than not, isn't the case. And we're looking at an industry that's going to be experiencing explosive growth in the years to come. We would just like to see some type of insurance that labor laws, amongst other laws, that govern the workplace are actually respected.
One last question, Mr. Chair. Do you have an idea of what they're paying? Is it below market rates in the Fargo area, or what kind of jobs are they? Minimum wage?
They're not minimum wage. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Mr. Representative, my apologies, Mr. Chair. The wages vary. There is no set structure. One of the chief complaints of the workers is that people that are recently hired make more than people have been working there for 10 years. They are at about, so, you know, depending upon which particular individual we're talking about would depend whether or not they're making what would be considered, I guess, standard in Fargo or below standard or perhaps above standard. But the primary issue of the workers involved isn't wages. It's scheduling. It's a matter of having to work mandatory overtime week after week to keep up with the demand and safety. Again, the pressures of demand are such that in order to turn out the bases at the pace that they need to, that they feel that safety requirements aren't being met.
Thanks.
Further questions? Representative Bly then moves the A1 amendment. All those in favor of its adoption signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
Amendment is adopted. Further questions to the bill? Representative Gunther, sorry.
I think my questions have been answered. This is something that Deed can handle. The governor.
Very well. Representative Western.
Mr. Chair, maybe I could get a better understanding because this does sound like something we've talked about in this committee on the RES bill that HF4 that passed already. Representative Peterson has some insight. We were going to come back and try to deal with Minnesota business opportunities and some local ownership issues. This looks like it's aimed at that similar goal. Representative Bly, how do you see this passing or tying in with what Representative Peterson and this committee is working with? And is it duplicative, or is this all we're going to pass is just pass off to the departments to come back with a report on how to make ownership opportunities available in Minnesota?
Well, Representative Westrom, let me answer the "is this all we're going to pass" part of that question. No, that's certainly not our intention. But Representative Bly,
Well, let me first say that this is the House companion to a Senate file bill, and perhaps it was the intent of the Senate author that maybe this would be all they would move forward. I don't necessarily think it's in competition or necessarily representative of the things that have been talked about or that Representative Peterson is going to bring forward, and perhaps he will bring forward too. But I think it is a way of saying that attention must be paid to making sure that things move forward.
Thanks.
Further questions? Representative Dunford.
Mr. Chairman, and to the witness, has there been any employee complaint to OSHA about this effect? I believe that's what Minnesota OSHA is for, to protect the working conditions of the workers. Has OSHA been called into play here for this plan?
Mr. Ledger.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Representative, I know that there have been discussions between the workers and management. Whether or not those discussions have gone on to OSHA, I am not aware of, but I can certainly get an answer and get back to you on that.
Representative Gunther.
I think it's very feasible and very possible that an employee can ask OSHA to come check the working conditions to make sure that if they are not standard and below standard, they can adjust them with the help of OSHA. I think that's what they're for.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Representative, I would certainly agree that that's the intent of OSHA, respectfully. Unfortunately, there seems to be at times an ability to live up to that standard 100% due to some issues of funding and compliance ability and capacity.
Thank you. Further questions? If not, Representative Bly renews his motion that House File 660 be recommended to pass as amended and be placed on the General Register. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
No. Motion prevails. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How are you?
Just happy to be alive. Do you wish the first three of your bills on the agenda, do you wish to take them in the order that they appear on the agenda, 1034, 1098, and 1145?
Sure, thank you.
Very well, then.
The first bill, 1034, I believe, Mr. Chair and members, is moving to state government finance.
That's correct, Representative Peterson. The motion would be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Finance with the recommended re-referral to state government finance.
And I
so
believe
we'll take that as your motion.
Thank you. Thank you very much for that. And I believe there are some amendments. Is that correct? What I understand?
We do have.
You have now. Good. Just quickly while that's coming around, this bill proposes to have the state consider heating and cooling systems in state buildings. And the state architect is here today to lend an opinion to the issue in front of us.
Please proceed. Mr. Chair, thank you for letting me be here. My name is Heidi Myers. I am with the State Architect with the Department of Administration. And you'd like my opinion.
Oh. We would.
Okay. The Department of Administration agrees with this particular bill. What it does is it allows the consideration of geothermal to be applied to state projects during the pre-design process. That's the most appropriate time to consider alternate energy sources. The pre-design already has a requirement to look at alternate energy sources, so this is just actually emphasizing the fact that we need to consider geothermal as one of the alternate sources. And pre-design, I hope if anybody has any questions on that and how it plays a role in our projects, let me know.
Questions for Ms. Myers? Representative Peterson or Ms. Myers, I know when this bill was heard in government operations, there was some question about water and what kinds of protections or what kinds of requirements there are surrounding water being circulated through geothermal systems and protections for the groundwater. Could you pursue that question any further?
Mr. Chair and members, I had not. So I believe that's Representative McGee's question.
It was, yes.
And if she had wanted to amend to have that included in the bill, I would be comfortable doing that. I just don't know what to put in the bill.
I raise the question because I know that was a concern of Representative Wagenius's, and she was not able to be here this afternoon.
I guess, Mr. Chair.
She probably will be preparing an amendment to address that question at some point.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and members. I guess since it's going to state government finance, I could talk with Representative Wagenius and offer an amendment if need be in front of the next committee we're in. Is that appropriate?
That would be a possibility, yes.
Okay. Well, with that, I think the League of Minnesota Cities is able to take a minute to lend their opinion, and then I think there's a couple amendments.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Craig Johnson. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities. On House File 1034, the League of Minnesota Cities has a couple of concerns with how this can affect cities. I've been working with the author of both the House and the Senate to have those addressed. One of those amendments does address that. I'll explain briefly what our position is on the bill and can either add my comments related to that amendment now or when you consider the amendment, Mr. Chair, whichever you prefer. The bill itself, Mr. Chair and members, only occasionally will affect cities, not nearly so much as it would affect the state, but we do have city projects occasionally that are funded in whole or in part with state loan or grant money, and this bill does affect state or buildings that are put up with those resources. So one of our concerns, Mr. Chair, is that this can have a couple of unintended consequences. It could be that while a city is retrofitting an older building using some state resources from a deed program or a similar program, they could intend to replace an old heating or cooling system with a new high efficiency one, and at the same time maybe replacing windows, inefficient lighting, other things, the net effect of which would actually be better for that building and better for energy savings than just putting in a geothermal heating and cooling system would have been by itself. So we had concerns that the bill actually, because it gives preference to the geothermal system, was too restrictive and could actually cause us to not be able to look at some of the other alternatives that we might want to otherwise look at. That was the primary concern. We feel the pre-design stage is the appropriate place to do this analysis. We did not have a concern with that in itself, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Peterson.
I think that at that point, this point we can get to amendments.
Amendments.
So I have one that you should have received that just says moves to amend. Page 1, line 11, after practical delete, and then it put, and notwithstanding any law to the contrary, then 1, line 12, given preference, delete that, and insert considered. And I believe Representative Saylor has amendments. So there's a, moving the first one. It doesn't have a number, but...
It does have your
name
on the top, so yep. we will refer to that as the Peterson A
Thanks.
Amendment, Representative Peterson. And I do have a question about the amendment as well. And that has to do with the term practicable. It has been pointed out to me that perhaps what is intended here is not practicable, but rather practical. The difference being that practicable means to the greatest extent possible, whereas practical means as far as is economically or in other terms feasible. So I think you want to be sure that that is the term that you want before we...
Mr. Chair, if you want to put in practical, then
I think
we could
Mr.
do that.
Johnson, did you have a comment on that?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm very used to the word practicable because I represent the League on environmental issues, and virtually every water law in the state uses the term practicable, and it does mean to the highest extent possible to achieve. I think it can work either way here. I would agree, Mr. Chair, that practical might be a more clear meaning in this case because it is referring to giving preference or in design. So it seems like it's fairly cut and dry. You either can do the system. You can analyze the system when you're designing, or you can't. I think practical could work. But that is the wording in the original bill. It's not in the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'll defer to you if you want to make that change.
I would not make an amendment at this time, but I think that that's something you want to consider and maybe...
Okay.
Thank you. We could take that up in state government finance.
Okay.
So to the Peterson A amendment. Any questions? Representative Western.
Well, Mr. Chair, I like the amendment just because I think the witness makes a good point. What if other energy ideas come along, and geothermal certainly makes a lot of sense, but there might be other things out there that we don't know about or that are even currently out there that make a lot of sense too. So I think that was a good move. But Representative Peterson, I don't see where this would preclude it, but recently I got, and I think many other members might have gotten, an email from a company out of Redwood Falls that does vertical boring for geothermal, and apparently under a representative, I believe it's Saylor's bill that we had passed out of here or heard the other day, somehow would exclude them potentially. And is there any reason this would preclude one type of geothermal versus another, or is it just you believe it's generic, broad enough to cover different technologies or applications of the same sort?
Yeah,
Representative Peterson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Western, I believe it's generic. it would eliminate that
concern.
Method.
Okay. Thanks.
Further questions on the Peterson A amendment? If not, Representative Peterson moves its adoption. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Amendment is adopted. Representative Saylor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I do have an amendment which basically even speaks to Representative Westrom's concern or mentioning of the fact that there may be other applications out there beyond geothermal. And because solar thermal applications are similar other than the heat source or their energy source, it seemed to make sense to incorporate it into this particular bill rather than have another one that was just all about solar thermal. So after speaking with Representative Peterson, he had agreed that adding the solar thermal as well would be satisfactory to him. Therefore, we do have the amendment saying on page one, and there is a little clarification. Actually, I guess it's clarified now by passing out the first engrossment. Is that correct, Mr. Elas?
It's half clarified. I mistakenly drafted the amendment to the bill as introduced, and when I came to committee and found out there was a first engrossment, I quickly redrafted it to match up with the page and line numbers, and gave Representative Saylor a handwritten version, which either she can read or I can read.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Saylor.
It would just be on page 1, line 8, after the word geothermal, insert and solar thermal. And on page 1, line 11, after geothermal, insert and solar thermal. And page 1, after 20, insert, as it reads, for purposes of this section, solar thermal means a flat plate or evacuated tube with a fixed orientation that collects the sun's radiant energy and transfers it to a storage medium for distribution as energy for heating or cooling.
Representative Saylor, did Mr. Elon.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and members, that last change was line 16. To match up with the first engrossment, not line 20.
Okay.
I'd also want to point out that in the first line of the amendment, after 1034, there should be comma, the first engrossment, comma. So we're clear on amending the first engrossment.
So, is everyone able to put that in? Representative Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, Representative Saylor, as you read the amendment, you at the very last line, you said heating or cooling. The amendment says and.
And, you're correct.
Okay. Do you want it and or you want it or?
And.
Okay. Thank you.
You can... All right. Other questions about the amendment? So Representative Saylor moves the A1 amendment as reflecting the incorporated changes. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The amendment is adopted. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. At this point, I think the bill's in form to go to the next committee if you so desire.
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I believe this may be the appropriate point just to raise a one point about the geothermal, since we're since all three of Representative Peterson's bills are before, or that we'll be talking about, address this issue. Just to know that under our existing portfolio of electrical production, generation, that in the winter it ends up being a little bit of a wash in terms of carbon emissions, but that between geothermal and a natural gas furnace, but certainly in terms of when we add in cooling, that geothermal is much closer to the technology that we would normally recognize in an air conditioner, and so it ends up being extremely efficient in the cooling period, and taken over the whole season right now, it ends up being slightly advantageous during the cooling period, and especially that these days we've had longer cooling period and fewer heating degree days, so it more and more tilts the table towards when we're looking at carbon and overall energy consumption. But of course, as we move closer to the reality of our RES and what Representative Peterson helped us pass and the governor signed, geothermal will continue to gain greater advantage in terms of efficiency and in terms of its carbon and other emissions. But just to recognize that currently it's sort of six of one, half a dozen of the other. But down the road, as our electrical generation profile changes, that it will become increasingly advantageous. And so I actually like the consideration language rather than the given preference, because I think the more that we consider it and the more that our energy economy changes, the more it will be given preference. But currently it's a little 50-50. Thank you for your indulgence, Mr. Chair.
Further questions or comments to the bill? Seeing none, Representative Peterson renews his motion that House File 1034 be recommended to pass as amended and be referred to the Committee on Finance with a recommendation to re-refer to the State Government Finance Division. All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion prevails. And so, Representative Peterson, House File 1098. Members, in the next two bills do not need to be heard in other committees. We'll not be voting on these bills today. We will just be laying them over for possible inclusion in an omnibus something bill. Representative Peterson, please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and I appreciate that it's going to be laid over for possible inclusion into something, because it is such that this idea for geothermal investment loans, and I don't know, Representative, do you have an amendment to this too? Okay, thank you. geothermal investment loans, municipalities, requiring the Commissioner of Commerce to approve loans to municipalities for investments associated with geothermal heating and cooling, provided municipalities have complied with this, all the things in the bill. And but it's a blank appropriation, and honestly, I need to do some more work on this with my state senator as to how this might actually be included in what the committee might come up with later this session. But again, Craig Johnson from League of Minnesota Cities is here to just briefly give their opinion of the idea.
Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, again, Craig Johnson with the League of Minnesota Cities. This is not a bill that the League drafted and put forward, but when we looked at it, it is exactly in keeping with the League's new position on sustainable development, which includes a provision that what our cities are really looking for is opportunities to use the developing and emerging technologies and renewable energy where they're appropriate to be used. This program is perfectly designed for that. It allows a community that has already made the decision to go forward with a renewable energy, and in this case geothermal, to have a state resource where they can help finance that at potentially a much better rate than they could otherwise achieve if they were to do it on their own. So we would be generally supportive of this concept as a way to help cities do that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Saylor, did you wish to move your amendment?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I would like to move the H-1098-A1 amendment, which basically this amendment, very similar to the last one, you know, just to be quick about it, inserts solar thermal after geothermal throughout the bill. But I will read the entire amendment. On page 1.1, it moves to amend it as follows. Page 1, line 15, delete geothermal and insert energy, and delete geothermal related and insert energy related. Page 1, after line 20, insert E, solar thermal, means a flat plate or evacuated tube with a fixed orientation that collects the sun's radiant energy and transfers it to a storage medium for distribution as energy for heating and cooling. And F, solar thermal investments, means all capital expenditures associated with a building, heating, or cooling application using solar thermal energy, and that have a 20-year or less payback period. Page 1, line 22, after geothermal, insert and solar thermal. Page 2, line 7, after geothermal, insert energy. Page 2, line 13, after geothermal, insert or solar thermal. Page 2, line 32, after geothermal, insert and solar thermal. Page 2, line 33, after geothermal, insert and solar thermal. Page 2, line 35, after geothermal, insert and solar thermal. Page 3, line 1, after geothermal, insert and solar thermal. And finally, page 3, line 5, after geothermal, insert, and solar thermal.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I think this is an acceptable amendment to this bill.
Seeing no further discussion on the amendment... All those in favor of its adoption signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, motion prevail. Representative Peterson, do you have someone else to testify on the bill?
Mr. Chair, no, but on the next one, the same person got listed on all three, but it's the next one. So that's it for this one.
Any further questions or comments? Representative West?
Mr. Chair, Representative Peterson, these would be zero-interest loans, I assume, or it doesn't, I didn't catch where it
yeah,
indicated.
Chair and Representative Westrom, yeah.
Representative Peterson.
I'm going to have to do some work on
okay.
this.
Okay, perfect. Look forward to working with you.
Yeah.
Further questions? All right, Representative Peterson, House File 1098 is laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus finance bill.
Thanks.
So, House File 1145.
Thank you. This bill is actually a geothermal incentive, and I believe Representative Saylor has a similar amendment like on the other two. So we can get to that after description. this proposes to, and there's a couple amendments as well, but it proposes to provide a one-time credit, $200 per ton, for geothermal heating and cooling equipment after June 30, 2007. And quarterly notice for utilities to inform their customers about how geothermal energy can reduce their heating bills and CO2 emissions, and to send them to purchase geothermal heating and cooling equipment is available under this section, and a sales tax credit is available in such and such. With me today I have Bob Donnelly from Econ Air Energy Systems, which has an office, or the plant is in the legislative district I represent in Appleton, but and it's also their sales, I believe, are out of Elk River. So, and I think he is able to address some of the concerns that Representative Wagenius had about water, and if that would be possible to include some of that in just a general background as to what geothermal is or is not. So with that, Mr. Donnelly.
Mr. Donnelly, welcome to the committee,
Chair.
Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Bob Donnelly with Econ Air Energy Systems, a Minnesota manufacturing company of geothermal heat pumps. I'm a sales supervisor for Econ Air, and I do work out at Elk River, Minnesota. Our manufacturing facility is in Appleton, Minnesota. We've been in business about 25 years as a manufacturer of geothermal heat pumps. I think before I get too far here, I just want to give everyone a good overview of how geothermal works and what it does, since maybe it's not quite clear to everybody. Our system is a refrigeration system. It's all electric. Works very similar to a freezer refrigerator in your home. It's no more complicated than that, other than it's on a larger scale. The whole reason why geothermal is so efficient and energy saving is that it moves energy rather than creates energy. And I say moves energy because it moves the natural heat from the ground into a heat exchanger installed in the ground called a geothermal loop field, and brings that heat naturally into the plastic pipe and through a water system and then into the heat pump itself. And so roughly of the capacity of the unit, two-thirds of the heating capacity was originated from the ground. And we do gain internal heat gains off the compressor, again, it's a refrigeration system. So it's an extremely efficient, very modern equipment. It's a heating and cooling system within one piece of equipment. Typically located, it will be located inside of the building, and it's got a low maintenance, long life, high quality, comfortable heating and cooling system. Premium heating and cooling, basically. That's my sales pitch. But it is. We've got many customers out there that are extremely pleased with this system. I was here about a week or so ago explaining what are the barriers against geothermal, and the comment I made was lack of consumer awareness of how these systems work and what they are. The bill before you today heightens that interest because it provides a rebate of $200 per ton, which on a typical residential home will equate to about $1,000 of rebate for installation of a geothermal heat pump system. Our systems are more expensive than traditional systems. Typically for a home that I'm talking about today, the added cost could be somewhere between $6,000 to $8,000 more to install our system. This $1,000 rebate would then reduce that initial added upfront cost. So I would encourage you to move the bill forward for consideration. Concerning the water that's being used here, that was a comment made earlier, the heat exchanger, the heat exchanger that's installed in the ground is a plastic pipe, essentially, polyethylene, high density, specifically made for this application. And that is basically buried in the ground at different configurations. But the key here is the water solution that is delivered through that pipe or that heat exchanger in the ground. We either use propylene glycol, food-grade propylene glycol, when we use a vertical type application, and that would be when a well driller comes in and they do require a permit, a state permit, to install a geothermal loop field using a vertical application. And so with that, the state of Minnesota regulates vertical geothermal loop field, and it is required to use propylene glycol at shallower depths, meaning 6 to 8 feet below grade. There is no permit required for that. We're not going through any aquifers. We're not contaminating any well water. And so the water solution with that is typically freeze protect with either propylene glycol again or a methanol solution. And so it's simply water recirculated through this earth loop and changes temperature essentially, and that's all we're doing. So I'm hoping that clarifies the water that we're using. The question came up earlier.
Representative Westman.
Mr. Chair, two questions. You talked about $68,000 extra for the installation. I assume that's over if you just installed a natural gas furnace or a propane furnace or something. What kind of cost recovery do you project? Because once it's installed, you're not paying a heat bill, you're paying an electric bill to pump the water or circulate it. What kind of cost recovery time is somebody looking at on average?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, typical savings, again, I'm talking about a typical home in Minnesota, brand new home, about 3,000 square foot, typical home in Minnesota. Again, a rebate of $1,000 and added cost of $6,000 to $8,000 against a natural gas furnace and a traditional outside air conditioning system. So that's the added cost for a geothermal system. The annual savings varies quite a bit with electric rates and natural gas rates fluctuating a lot, but a fair estimate would be somewhere around $600 to $700 per year would be a savings with that system.
Okay. Second question. We hear a lot about global warming, and as we talk about this, I think, well, now we're taking heat from the earth and dispensing it into the houses, which is, or buildings, which are losing it into the atmosphere. Are we going to cause global cooling, or are we going to contribute more by taking the heat on the core of the earth and put it in the atmosphere and worsen this problem? Has anybody thought about this?
Mr. Chair, Representative, the amount of energy in the ground below our feet is incredible. If you start calculating the amount of mass there, density, and the temperature that we're working with, the Earth's crust is essentially solar heated. It's a huge solar collector that we live on. It's the crust of the Earth is solar heated. Obviously, there's deep geothermal, which I'm not talking about here today. I'm talking about the crust of the Earth from 8 feet to 100 or 200 feet roughly, and that temperature is kept constant by the solar energy and not from deep below the earth. Obviously the sun, as long as we have that there, will renew that solar collector, if you will, and so there's a renewable energy that we're tapping into. Solar, it's essentially, Econ-Art, by the way, is has solar in it, and so we do equate ourselves with solar energy. Econ-Art is earth concentrated solar, is where the name Econ-Art came from, and so that gives you a little insight into the energy that we're tapping into.
All right, thanks.
Further comments or questions? So, Mr. Donnelly, back to the water question for a moment. What are the environmental implications of propylene glycol?
There are none. It's a food-grade propylene glycol. You can drink it.
And, Mr. Donnelly, why is that necessary in the system?
Mr. Chair, it's a state requirement by the Department of Health, I believe it is, that requires that to be used. Not all states require that. And it's when we go down to, let's say, 200 feet with a well, potentially we're going through different aquifers, is to avoid any potential, if there is a leak, any contamination of any water in the area. But with propylene glycol, there would be no contamination.
Mr. Donnelly, why can't you just use plain water?
Okay, good question, Chairman. The temperatures, let me kind of review Geo-101 a little bit with you. Our ground in this area is roughly 48 to 50 degree ground temperature. That's our well water temperature at 8 feet or maybe 10 feet and deeper. The water inside of the, in order for us to get proper heat transfer, the water needs to be colder than the ground. Heat will move from warm to cool, and that's what geothermal does. It's geothermal, the heat pump itself All it does is establishes a temperature difference by which we can move the energy out of the ground into the into the plastic, into the water stream, and into the refrigeration system. And it's all stepped down in temperature. And I'll give you an example. Let's say it's a 50-degree ground temperature we're dealing with. In the wintertime, the water temperature inside the heat exchanger, the earth loop heat exchanger, is going to be about 35 degrees water temperature. It gains as it comes into the heat pump. It comes in, let's say, at 35 degrees. We take about 5 to 7 degrees of water temperature out of it, and that is our essential heat source that we're dealing with. We deal with a fairly small temperature change of the water, but the water then goes out at 28 degrees, let's say, out into that earth loop and warms up to 35 degrees. It's simply recirculated and only changes in temperature. The water then comes into the heat pump through a heat exchanger. On one side is that cold water, 35 degrees. On the other side, we have a colder refrigerant, above 25 degrees. And so now we have natural heat transfer from that 35-degree water into 25-degree refrigerant, and that will happen automatically just through that heat exchanger. So in review, we go from 50-degree ground temperature to 35-degree water temperature to 25-degree refrigerant temperature, all naturally, natural thermal conductivity. And so we need to have freeze-protected water basically to protect the heat exchanger inside of our heat pump. And that's the coldest part of the whole system here, because at times that water temperature could get down to maybe 20 degrees inside of the heat pump, and that is the coldest part of the whole system, is inside the heat pump itself. It's not to protect the geothermal loop field from freezing, it's to protect the heat exchanger inside of our heat pump from freezing.
Thank you. Further questions, members? Representative Peterson, I do think we have three amendments.
Mr. Chair, we have two amendments.
Very
work
well.
In progress as well. Thank you.
In any case, I think the first amendment is Representative Kalin's, the HDA 026. Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My amendment, actually, I'm going to add to my amendment, if that's okay, a second line, I believe, is distributed. I'll explain first what my amendment does and then explain the second addition, or the addition. My amendment merely clarifies that by inserting the word electric before utility on line 1.7, each public electric utility, is how it would read if amended, merely clarifies that we're not asking our natural gas providers to provide incentives for them to lose customers. I think it's pretty logical. So it's bad enough that they're losing customers. We don't need to ask them to pay for that. So that's what the first addition does. I'm going to actually ask that we add, that we insert the word electric also on line 111. Between public and utility, so line 111 should read each public electric utility. I'm getting a staff is looking at me with.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm looking at, there is a definition of public utility in the statute hang on. 1 minute, Mr. Chair.
Certainly.
The current definition doesn't include municipality or cooperative electric association.
Can you, Mr. Chair?
The current definition of public utility doesn't include a municipality or a cooperative electric association. I don't know if you intended to do that in your amendment or not.
Representative Kalin?
I'm wondering if staff, we might merely delete the word public thing, would that cover? what we're doing, or maybe we might guidance from, well, from you, department staff or
Representative Kalin and Mr. Hill, if I could suggest, since we're barely laying this bill over for
we'll
consideration later,
yeah.
Maybe we could fix this in a more thoughtful manner.
Agreed, Mr. Chair, and I will. I think the committee gets the spirit of the amendment, and I'm seeing agreement around the table to the spirit of it. So we'll. I'll withdraw the amendment, and we'll work on fixing the language as appropriately. And I think Representative Osment also might have some guidance down the road. So, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Kalin. Representative Kalin withdraws the HDA 026 amendment. So, Representative Peterson, what do we have left then?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. We have left Representative Saylor's amendment, similar to her previous two on the other bills.
Representative Saylor.
Mr. Chair and members, this will be fairly familiar to you, as again we are simply adding the term solar thermal and changing any necessary applications within it. So moving to amend House File 1145 as follows. Page 1, line 6, after geothermal, insert and solar thermal. Page 1, lines 8, 12, and 13, after geothermal, insert and solar thermal. And page 1, after line 15, insert, for the purposes of this section, solar thermal means a flat plate or evacuated tube with fixed orientation that collects the sun's radiant energy and transfers it to a storage medium for distribution as energy for heating and cooling. Page 1, after line 21, insert, subdivision 34, solar thermal equipment. The collector, storage medium, and distribution and charges for installation of solar thermal heating and cooling systems are exempt.
The Representative Saylor moves the adoption of the H1145A1 amendment. Representative Peterson, is that agreeable to you?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Yes.
Any questions or comments on the amendment?
Mr. Chair, I would just like to say that I had a testifier that was unable to attend due to the weather that would have been able to talk more about solar thermal. But at any rate, if this is included or moves along, my testifier would be very happy to come down and testify in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. To the motion, all those in favor of the adoption of the A1 amendment signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Amendment is adopted. Representative Peterson.
Well, thank you, committee, for geothermal afternoon. And I'd like to thank Econ Air for coming in to explain to us the technology and being supportive of a growing industry in western Minnesota.
Well, before we lay this bill as amended over for possible inclusion in the omnibus finance bill, are there any further comments or questions? Is there anyone in the audience wishing to testify? Mr. Lockhart.
I just have a question. I may have been busy doing something else. We do this amendment that includes the SIP?
I think that's
no.
Representative Osmond's amendment that Representative Peterson was eliminated.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm still working out that one. It was prepared right before committee, and it needs to be added to, from what I understand, from the utility. So it's a work in that's... I'm not sure exactly what it needs extra, but I've been told it needs a little work. So we'll hold off on that one. But I'd like your support.
We'll see that it gets worse on
Mr. Chair, I just it's an important amendment because that's where I get my comfort zone on this thing. So.
Yeah, no, Mr. Chair and Representative Osmond, yeah, I agree with you.
Thank you.
Mr. Larkin.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm sure Representative Peterson is nervous about me being up here wondering what I'm going to say. I'm going to speak positively to your bill, Senator Peterson. We've actually been in the geothermal business since 1995.
Mr. Lochtag, would you identify yourself for the record?
For the record, yeah, Mr. Chair, I'm Laura Lochtag from Otter Tail Power Company. For the record also, we've been in this since 1995. We pay currently $216 a ton, and we have so far 1,186 participants in our geothermal heat pump program. And we have rebated $725,000 to customers to do geothermal since 1995. So we think this is an excellent idea, and we commend Representative Peterson's bill. Just a couple of extra thoughts. There's not something in the bill, since we're discussing amendments this afternoon, there's nothing here regarding standards for performance, and the Energy Star standard for performance is a COP of 3.3. So that may be one more feature you might want to add into the bill. The addition of solar thermal, normally geothermal heat pump systems are sized for cooling. And so they're basically installed on a per ton basis. And cooling is always done per ton. I'm not aware of solar thermal being done on a per ton basis. So I'm just asking, what does $200 per ton mean for solar thermal, if solar thermal is sold and installed on a different basis than a per-ton basis? So I'm concerned that maybe it's not been through the same kind of... The department normally puts this through the rigorous routine of proving that all this makes sense. And so I would assume that maybe the department would be involved in doing something similar with solar thermal as well. That concludes my comments, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Longton. Representative Saylor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I will certainly say I am not the solar thermal expert. As I say, my testifier was unable to be here. However, I did have a discussion with him about that, and I said, does this $200 a ton make sense for solar? But he was doing the conversions that it was 1,200 BTUs per hour, and at any rate, he addressed that. I'm unfortunately unable to address it in technical proficiency, but as this moves along, and my testifier is here, I think that we will be able to address that properly. Thank you.
We look forward to that discussion. And Representative Peterson, how was the $200 figure arrived at?
I believe it, Mr. Chair, members, that I believe it's in line with what other utilities across the state use, and what Otter Tail has 218, 200, 150, I think, is Excel right now. So it's moving it into that general what's offered already per ton. And I introduced the bill, but in 2003, and this is the first hearing it's ever gotten. So maybe it's in. Not the appropriate number, and maybe somebody who's more in favor or against would suggest another, but I'm having it at 200 because it seems to be in the range of where the rebate's offered anyway.
Well, now that the bill has been heard and laid over, I think we probably will hear from people who have opinions about that number. Representative Welty.
Thank you, Chair Hilton. To Representative Peterson, I just want to assurance that you checked with the utilities on this issue and you took into consideration their concerns as you've been moving this bill forward and as you created the bill. Can you kind of give me a background on the history with your work with the utilities?
Mr. Chair and Representative Welty, I originally, when I was first elected, I did not check. It was something that my senator and I came up with. And since the hearing was scheduled, I've spoken with the utility, mainly in question, I guess it's Excel, and they have an amendment that they would like to offer as we go ahead that says that this will be counted towards their SIP. So I guess to the extent that I am working with the utilities. Thanks.
Further questions? Representative Osmond.
Well, just a comment, Mr. Chair, and that
you can only go with what is presented, and I know that what really makes this palatable now is the inclusion of SIP. Once it becomes part of SIP, then we're no longer talking about a ratepayer impact, and so that makes all the difference in the world, and you may have gotten a hearing a little bit earlier if SIP had been included.
Further comments? Is there anyone else who wishes to testify for or against this bill? Ms. Brewster.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. Again, Christy Brewster from the Department of Commerce. Just wanted to add a little bit of perspective, especially with the SIP language being right around the edges, as far as what we do today and where geothermal stands in our program now. There were questions as to, you know, how did we arrive at $200? And $200 is what I saw in the bill as well, so I did a little checking. And Xcel Energy offers a $150 per ton rebate now. Minnesota Power is at $200 per ton for a closed loop, $100 for an open loop, and they have a special incentive for installers as well. Interstate Power and Light, $300 per ton closed loop, $150 for going above a certain efficiency level in addition to that. Otter Tail Power is at $218 a ton, and Dakota Electric is at $200 per ton. So when you're looking at Section 1 of this bill, all of our electric public utilities now offer a rebate of at least $200 per ton, with the exception of Xcel, who's at $150. And the department has a rigorous review process where we look at proposals from the utilities and the dollar figure that they're arriving at for a specific rebate. And we look at their avoided costs, and we also look at what they're offering as incentive dollars towards that, and it must be cost effective for them to do it. And various utilities have different load shapes, so this technology has a bigger impact on their system depending on their overall load shape. For example, Xcel Energy, most of their customers heat with natural gas, and so the benefit to Xcel Energy of geothermal is on the cooling side, and it doesn't have the same benefit as it would to maybe Otter Tail, where there's more customers heating with electric. And so that's why you see the discrepancy in the different dollar figures that are out there. I would question, given that all of our utilities offer a geothermal rebate through SIP now, whether Section 1 of the bill is necessary. But I would defer, obviously, to the committee on that. And the solar thermal adds a new wrinkle that we haven't had in SIP before, because solar thermal is a supply side, you know, it's an additional power, something we haven't discussed before, and I'd want to consult with the folks that do solar on our end as to how that would fit in and whether a per ton or something else would be appropriate. But so far, our SIP program hasn't rebated for solar except for on the very small renewable end of the program that we have there.
Questions for Ms. Brewster? Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess maybe another minute, we go to $300, $400. We have an auction on Friday afternoon. I'm not sure. But I appreciate the department's analysis, and obviously there's some amendments coming here, and would appreciate as we move ahead in session that we get it all straightened out, and I'll talk to my senator as well.
Well, we appreciate that this is a work in progress, Representative Peterson, and I hope that you will continue consulting with the relevant parties.
Thank you.
Thank you. If there are no further questions or comments, we will lay House File 1145 over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Finance Bill. And members, with that, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much for attending in such terrible circumstances, and be careful out there.